Previously on The Sound of Football.
It may well have to be then written into the contract that you will not say interesting things on Twitter.
You will say only dull things.
You will say only dull things. That's
right. Any comments you make must be this dull.
if your comments are this dull, then we'll find you a week's wages.
Can you imagine Trevor Brooking in the modern era? Anyway.
Yes, it's a Sound of Football podcast with Graham Sibley and your host, Chris Oakley.
And a very warm welcome to each and every one of you. Very glad you can join us for this 88th enthralling instalment of the Sound of Football podcast. We have something a little bit different for you this week, and that's been caused in no small part because Terry DeFellin has gone off for a week of rest and relaxation in warmer climes. Good for Terry, but bad for Graham and myself. We've been left somewhat in the lurch. We've had to...
Oh, yeah, so awful for us.
It's terrible. I mean, we've had to come to this pub, which is the Globe near London Bridge, to have auditions to find a suitable replacement for Terry, and after the auditions, I'm pleased to say that we've managed to find a more than adequate replacement. In Terry's place this week, we've got the brawn and the brain behind the Tooth & Tangle blog site and podcast. We've got the man who very kindly writes the MLS column for us on footballfairground.com, which is Football Americanas, if you didn't already know. He is the one, the only, the incomparable Mr. Chris Lee. Welcome, Chris.
Hello. Good evening.
And you're not going to get an introduction like that on Tooth & Tangle.
I'll get puns and sarcasm, that's all I get.
I suggest you go back and speak to Gary Andrews next time you see him and sort of say, that's how you do an intro. Yeah, none of this kind of taking me for granted business. This is the way forward. In terms of filling in for Terry, just to put you at your ease, there's actually nothing to worry about. I've got it on good authority from Terry that he does absolutely no preparation for this podcast whatsoever. That's about as high as the bar is set.
I've got my cold tea and webcam ready, so
there you
should
are.
Be a decent enough performance.
Excellent. Well, Graham is here. Hello to you, Graham.
Hello, Chris.
This week we've decided we're going to talk about what it is to be a football supporter. How do we support our teams? How do we debate? Should we feel empathy towards one another? These are some of the things we're going to be discussing. How we view the game and understand its shared experiences, and indeed whether there's any distinction between being a fan and a supporter. These and many other issues will be discussed during the next half an hour. Now, I'm going to come to you first, Graham. Just to give Chris a bit of time to assess the pace of our podcast, and we realise he's coming from two.
Yeah, I know. He's going to have some time to get up to speed, isn't it? With our quick-fire banter.
Yes, indeed. He's got a strange look on his face at the moment, Chris. But anyway, never mind. Now, I'm going to start with what could well be quite a long-winded question, so bear with me on this. If we go back to, like, the 1950s, say, and...
I don't go for that far back.
Ah, no, then you do surprise me. No, anyway, so... Back to 1950s,
yeah.
Say three people like ourselves wanted to see some football and enjoy the kind of shared experience of the thing. The only way you could have done it is to go along to a match, see it in the flesh, and then pile into a pub like this and talk about it into the wee small hours of the following morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Nowadays, well, let's say going even into the 60s, you get your terrestrial TV showing highlights, so you can see a bit of TV there. Satellite TV comes along in the 80s, internet comes along in the 21st century, and so we're now at a point where you can kind of see any level of football from any country, any day of the week, and using any method you like. In terms of shared experience, how much do you think it's been fragmented by this amazing development of technology we've got? Is there some kind of deterioration in how we all view shared experiences of the game?
I don't know. I mean, I think... You can't just see the football experience from the past as in just something you did on the day. It was something that happened throughout the whole week. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like these guys, 50-odd years ago, would have been working in offices and factories and going, especially like in a city like London, and there are some plenty more other cities around the country that have more than one team. Mm-hmm. And then they'd have to go and share, and they'd be sharing their experiences all week about it. I know when I was younger, that was the way it was. You'd go into the office on Monday morning, and then there would be the banter around the office. Working in office in Croydon, it was basically the banter about how Crystal Palace had done that. Not very well.
And yeah, so I suppose the shared experience, however, is I think has changed. I think over the last 10 years, it's moved over to BBSs, whereby you either go over to like a club-specific website and you're talking about it on there, or you're flaming some troll or something, just interloped your website and just put up the latest derogatory chant about one of your best players. And of course now you've got the Twitter.
It's the Twitter.
The Twitter. And yeah, you've got that. That's the way we all interact. That's the way. But no, it's not. That's not the way we all interact. That's the way some people interact. Some people don't. Some people still go to games. Some people still talk about it down the pub afterwards.
But
some people still get into fights.
And the night is young, it may yet be us, who knows. The point, as you're sort of alluding to, I guess, is that, the three of us have turned up tonight.
Yeah.
You, Graham, could have you could be here talking about, the Arsenal match you've seen on Match of the Day.
Yeah.
I could be here talking about some French highlights, football.
I could be talking about the White Leaf game I saw.
Yeah. And Chris could be talking about Tooting and Mitchell that he went to see in person. So, that's not to say, obviously, we're not interested in each other's areas.
No.
But, Chris, I suppose, really, in terms of the strength of that shared experience, all the options that are available to us, does it perhaps deteriorate from how we're sharing our experience of the game?
I don't know about deteriorate. I think it certainly has changed, as Graham was saying, because I still do have a shared experience at games in person with people that I don't necessarily interact with online. And at the same time, I know guys like you where I will talk about lots of different areas of the game. It will be conducted primarily online or in a pub, but it will be based on football that we've watched on Sky or on the internet, not necessarily the football that I go to. So I think it's maybe kind of maybe fragmented slightly, whereas I have different experiences of football which I share with different people. And it encompasses different parts of what the shared experience of football used to be.
Obviously we have to kind of temper things with the fact that we all three of us and Terry sort of mix in amongst sort of circles of bloggers and podcasts.
General football commentators, yeah. Really. Yeah.
People have perhaps a much more sort of intense interaction with the game, and they write about the game and so on and so forth. But do you detect in this day and age, where there's so much choice available, that your ordinary football fan is maybe having to be a bit more kind of selective about what they want to watch on the basis that they can't possibly wish to be on top of everything, that they're sort of saying, okay, well, I'm going to have to focus specifically on my team in, say, the Premier League or the Champions League, or I'm going to go and watch my local team only because there's so much stuff. Do you think that's going on, or are people actually embracing the amount of choice?
I don't know if that's necessarily the cause, but I think a lot of what you might call general football fans, they tend to focus on their own team, as they probably always have done.
Yeah.
But you get the sense it's a little bit more exclusive than it used to be, because you may be able to, maybe in the 70s and 80s you would talk to fellow supporters of different clubs in a different way and beat the crap out of them in a different way. But I think there's maybe something more defensive about the people who do close themselves off to one club at the moment, and it very much becomes kind of us against the world, and that's even for huge global clubs. And those supporters still have this defensive mentality that just means that any kind of debate or criticism of them will completely set them off. And I think that's another change that has happened.
It's very interesting you say it, because I was reading on Twitter and someone retweeted something about a United fan gloating about the fact that City were still below Man United despite all their money. that's the whole sort of thing about blinkered fandom.
Yeah, I think blinkered is the word.
Yeah.
And that probably hasn't changed over the years, but no. It manifests itself in such a clear way now.
I think that is weird, because there was a time that when this whole thing about vociferous sporting of clubs didn't actually exist. I think there is, and I don't know if this story is apocryphal or not, whether it actually happened, but when Southampton won the FA Cup
76,
it was they actually paraded it around at Fratton Park.
Oh really?
They took it to Fratton Park and they got a standing ovation, apparently.
Wow.
could. Like to believe.
I'd like to believe this.
I'm not sure.
But one story they do have is that my granddad was an Arsenal fan. But when he would go and watch the game, he would go and watch Arsenal play every other week. And when he didn't watch Arsenal play, he went to watch Chelsea play.
Yes. Well, hearing you have.
Yeah. Because he wanted to see football. And so, Chelsea were the other team in the league at the time. And then they think, right, okay, well, I'll go and see them now.
The funny sort of way, with the kind of migration into non-league that, you know, in our little echo chamber, quite a lot of people are doing. But yeah. I think it's increasing outside as well. I've got no game on Saturday and I'm going to go and see Sutton United against Dulwich Hamlet, and those are the two teams that I'm supposed to hate the most.
I did the same the week before. I went to see Chipstead in the FA Cup, and like Chipstead are the nearest rival to Whiteleaf, and I saw them winning the FA Cup.
It sounds really old fashioned, but actually this is stuff that people are still doing.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily full blown ground hopping.
No.
I'm still going to the sort of most local game that is available. It's exactly the same phenomenon as it used to be.
Exactly. And it's all the better for it, because you know there is a game going on. And the thing is, it's true. What we are as football fans, or fans of football, is that I know, for me, and I know I could probably talk to everyone who I speak to referring to their own blog and podcast, is that if you see two guys kicking a football, you will watch it.
Yes.
Yeah. If you pull up at a set of traffic lights at Acton Marshes or Purley Way and there's a game kicking off there, and it could be amongst a bunch of 8-year-olds, but if they're playing football, you're watching.
Mm. Oh, absolutely, yeah. My personal kind of experience of the weekend, there's a park over the road, a massive big park.
Yeah.
And I went over there, and there was a couple of amateur teams of varying girths, shall we say. And I was over there with my wife and my 5-year-old daughter, and before I knew it, I realised that I'd been staring at the football for about 10 minutes, and that my wife and daughter about half a mile away, they'd walked off. And I just, honestly, I just sort of get attracted to it. It's just, it's football. So
it is the hypnotic quality of the game.
Yeah. We mentioned earlier on about how we sort of debate football. I mean, we sort of talked about sort of bulletin board and so on. Where else do fans debate? I mean, do you sense that it's still kind of down the pub, kind of chatting about football much? And where else do people kind of congregate? Or is it pretty much dominated now by places like Twitter that people kind of exchange their views?
Well, I think it's very weird, because as Chris said, I mean, we operate in our own little bubbles, don't we?
Yes.
And for us, we get a lot of our stuff from Twitter. I mean, because Twitter's overtaken blog comments in many ways.
Yes.
Blog comments have dried up basically since Twitter's come around. Which I think is quite good, because it spreads it out a bit more, and it does, but it also makes it a lot more transient. It's gone in no time.
Yes,
really.
Yeah. It's not there.
But then again, most of what we talk about football isn't worth talking about, listening to, or reading a week after it's actually happened.
It is.
I think just because there's more choice format from where how you can talk about the game, I don't think that's necessarily meant that we're talking less in other areas. Mm-hmm. I think we're just filling up whatever space we can occupy.
Which is there, yeah.
Anything?
Well, I think it's just interesting to note that the three of us are sat in a pub talking about football. The only difference is that we've got a recorder with us.
Yeah, exactly.
So there are still people that will go out and do this. And
our conversations about football now, we know that they're actually content, so we actually try and record them.
Nothing goes to waste.
There must still be people who don't record every conversation they have.
No, correct.
It must happen, and whether those debates hold any value, and whether it is just kind of inter-team rivalry, or whether there is genuine kind of interesting opinion that is generated in those, I'm not so sure, because frankly I don't really come across it that much anymore.
Well, I think it's weird, because obviously a lot of the debate, I think, nowadays is pushed by the media, and who have their own interests in pushing a certain debate, whether it's via newspapers or subscribe to our channels. But that is meant to be, is that reflecting what people are actually talking about in pubs? Well, I should think it probably is, by and large.
It's very perceptive of you that you've actually sort of said that, because one of the things I was just going to bring up is the fact that on, say, radio phone-ins and TV, like I'm thinking like say, I don't know, Sky Sports, when you have these kind of... do they still do... Is it Ring... Was it called Sky Sports?
You're on Sky
Sports.
You're sadly deluded, I think.
Yes. Working title, as we know. You know, I was going to bring that up because it does seem, to my mind, it seems more geared towards who they've got as the kind of celebrity kind of, you know, sitting in on the conversations, whether it's radio or TV. And there's almost, it's almost like, you know, don't forget everyone, we've got this celeb in, and this is our wonderful show. So, like, yes, we appreciate the fact that you're ringing in, and to some extent you're giving us something to talk about. But yeah, this is our show, and this is our celeb.
This is a show. This is a phone-in show that goes on a subscription-only channel. This is a show that the subscribers themselves have to provide the content for and pay for.
And what, cut to the chase, Graham. What is it you're trying to say?
I'm just putting it out there. I'm not saying that. I'm not judging that at all.
But it's a fair point.
I think actually though, some of those shows, the ones with a little bit of a history behind them, they reflect where I think the quality of general football debate is going.
Oh man, I tell you when it really kicks off is like you know, it's when you like you know, you're on a weekend and you're driving up north and you're going up the M40 and then you're flicking through the radio channels and then you hear an East Midlands or a West Midlands radio phone in. They just take it to another level, don't they?
Yeah, thinking of Tom Ross, playing the game. The one I had in mind is 606, and I remember listening to it with David Mellor, and this is David Mellor, and he did a better job. And it's gone through quite a few people since then, from Alan Green to Spoonie, and even beyond him, frankly. And it's, I genuinely think, as much as we do have our bubble, our echo chamber, and we mix very much in circles where we believe, you know, we can have a worthwhile debate with people. But over the years, I genuinely do think that kind of top level, just fans phoning in, I think that has dumbed down as well.
Oh yeah, it has.
It's more
the case of who can say, you know, the most not shocking things, but the most
inflammatory.
almost like oh, this man is almost in tears or is on the verge of a nervous breakdown because of what his football club has done. And it's a sort of thing, you know, get a grip, you know, like listen to that next week and find out. I mean, you know, the sort of people who phone these things are the really annoying person in the office who actually not want to talk to about football at all.
Yeah, just don't even bring
how narrow minded. You wouldn't want to talk to them about anything, basically, would you?
No, quite. Just, I mean, before we kind of move on, I mean, I was just going to bring up the subject of the blog or bulletin board troll, as it was kind of very briefly mentioned earlier on. To what extent do you think they're impeding the ordinary supporters' right to have, you know, decent debate, well thought out debate? Because it's just, I mean, you Graham, mentioned earlier on about leaving comments on blog sites. I mean, if you're a particularly popular blog site, which we've never been in a position, we don't know what it's like. We're only going by theory. But it, you know, the minute you get any popularity, you get people coming to your site. Of course, comments are then littered with people sort of saying, you don't know what you're effing talking about, etc., etc. And of course, if you go to a bulletin board for a particular club and you say something out of turn, you're really going to get your ears burnt there. So to what extent is that putting off people having debate online that have got a fairly balanced, you know, view on it?
I think any community that is as blinkered as that won't survive. All online communities are really just waiting for the next schism.
Yes.
When half of them walk away and
make up their own sense of community.
And there is no sense of global community when it comes to online. Because you'll always get falling out. As soon as things go slightly bad, I'm talking about really bad, I'm talking about slightly bad, then, you know, you'll see that fraction there. But it's, personally, I mean, trolls are something that are almost necessary. It's an evil. It's like the devil of blogging. It's something that sits out there and makes you behave yourself because you think, you know, you've got to look out and you've got to be careful what you're going to say or how you say it and how you treat people who come to your site.
Away from bulletin boards, blog comments. comments and Twitter, you have the genuine trolls, and actually I don't think they're too much of a problem. Because you can read them like a book.
Oh, the top, you know exactly what they're up to. And they act exactly the same way all the way over.
But the other side of it is the people who are not just being negative or being provocative for the sake of it. They're the fans of a particular team that they, you know, they read the first paragraph of a post or they read one tweet
and,
they make a snap judgment and they just come at you. It becomes abusive very, very quickly. And I don't think those guys are trolling. I genuinely think they are just that blinkered that they cannot see any criticism.
These people will not forget anything you say, ever.
The sad thing is, they're not trolls.
No.
They are the modern football fans.
There's kind of similarities here. The next point I was going to go on to, we've talked about sort of going to see football in the flesh and supporting local teams and keeping, you know, the most basic traditions going in terms of being a football supporter. To what extent would you say, I'm going to aim this at you, Graham, to what extent do you think there's still this ostracism going on about, you know, you're not a proper football supporter if you don't go and support a team in the flesh, because it used to be quite sort of prevalent. I'm not sure to what extent that's kind of strengthened or weakened now, because it's almost like, well, the fact that there are so many options, you can go online and you can, you know, social media and all the rest of it, you've got an opportunity to sort of talk about it and to some extent, you know, appear quite sort of well informed. But, you know, do you think there is still a kind of hardcore people who sort of say to you, well, if you don't, because to put it another way, if I go to work tomorrow and I speak to someone and they sort of say, oh, what did you do at the weekend? And I sort of say, I know it's West Ham one. And they go, oh, did you go to the match? And go, oh, no, I didn't go. And you see their eyes kind of glaze over and sort of go, oh, he's not a proper football fan, he didn't go. Is there still much of that about, do you think?
Well, for me, I'd be like, I don't think it matters, really, personally. I don't go.
No, quite.
If you want to go, you can go. If anyone wants to go to a football club, they can. They have to play a shitload of money to actually do that.
Yes.
I mean, even if your side happens to be in League One, you're still having to pay a stupid amount of money to go and see them. No, you've got so many opportunities to see your club, and if you're watching your club on Sky, you are supporting them anyway, because Sky pay a hell of a lot of money for that benefit, and if you're paying a subscription, then you are providing money to them and News International.
Just to hurt myself. But I mean, Christopher, that's I accept that as a view, but other people don't. So, I mean, what's your take on it? Do you feel that there is a certain, you know, if you want to really kind of prove that you're a football fan, that you really ought to go along and support, even if it's in your local non-league side?
Not necessarily. I do think it is important if you have a local side anywhere in the world that, you know, you should consider going and seeing them, because football has this massive power and it's so important that it is supported.
The thing is about supporting your local side is the fact that it comes from a time when, you know, there was a reason why football stadium was built in built-up areas. Because
to capture the
basically
community.
People walked everywhere. They didn't have cars. They very rarely used public transport. And if you wanted people to come to see a game, they would have to walk there. Nowadays, that's not the case. People want to drive to a club, or they want to get the train there.
Comfortable stadium.
And so you can have them a few miles out of town. They don't need to be where they were, where their heart was, because
down the road from where
because the demographic has changed there completely anyway. It's, you know, we don't live in the 30s anymore, or the 20s.
In spite of the, you know, I do place a lot of importance in supporting local football where you can, but I think it's just important to judge fellow fans kind of based on actual interactions with them. You know, if they talk a lot of crap and they clearly don't support football properly, that's up to them, and you can just judge them on that. But if there's somebody who watches loads of football, creates content for loads of people, genuinely knows the game, and doesn't go to matches, I don't think that they're necessarily any less of a fan than anyone else.
And by and large, it gives you a better insight as to what that person is really like.
That's true.
Okay, well, I mean, there's something you sort of mentioned, Graham, just before we started, which was about the distinction between being a football fan and a football supporter.
Well, I think that goes on what we were just saying about the fact that you turn up. If you are supporting a club, you are directly financing them. You are going there and you're clearing 100 quid out of your wallet every time you go out there on Saturday.
Yes, it is.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
So it's very rare that I'm like, yes, I support Whiteleaf because I go, I'm thinking it's easy to get hold of. I buy a round or two of drinks on there on a Saturday, and then I throw a couple of coins into the big pot on the bar to pay for the Sky Sports. I'm supporting Whiteleaf there, and that's
fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm going to put to you, Chris, what will probably sound like a very simple question, but it's got a deceptively complicated answer, I suspect. How happy do you think football fans in this present moment in time are? And if they're happy, if they're very happy even, why are they happy? What is it that's kind of making their whole kind of perception of football and an experience of watching football, what is it that's making them so happy, if they're happy at all?
Without wanting to sound too judgmental, I think the average football fan is happy at the moment. I think they're looking at £50 million being spent on top players. I think they're seeing probably the best coverage imaginable. I'm sure it will improve over the years, but you look at the product that Sky Sports put out and set your kind of cynical old-timey football fan apart from that, the coverage is incredible. So the people that are out there kind of consuming this product that we hear about so often, I think they're getting a good product. They are enjoying decent quality football. It's arguably getting a little bit more competitive at the top end in certain ways. And I think generally, for anybody who doesn't particularly feel inclined to delve under the skin at all, I think it's probably pretty decent times with a football fan. What they don't have, of course, is kind of the awareness that it can't continue in exactly the way that it's going.
No, that is a rather worrying trend. It's whether it will survive when the bubble eventually bursts is a worrying thing that we all have to contemplate.
Sadly, I've probably reached a point where I don't care if the bubble does burst, because someone will start a football team.
Oh, no, certainly.
So that's what I want. It's probably be better than what I watch already.
Exactly. You know the fact that effectively, that Aston Villa won't cease to exist. There will never be a time in your lifetime where there will not be a team called Aston Villa. And I know there won't be any time in my lifetime where there won't be a team called Arsenal, and that I will be interested in seeing how they get on and how and what they're doing. And it's that sort of thing that I think that the agenda is obviously like been really ramped up. The whole thing about promotion and relegation for clubs has now been seen turned into some sort of gulag. That's what like going down to the Championship is like. And and for some clubs it's like promotion is seen as some like panacea and cure to all when it's not meant a lot of the time just the start of a team's troubles.
The importance of football has got a bit murky basically.
Yeah.
Football for me is massively important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Life and death, probably not.
No.
But politically, culturally, socially, football is hugely important all around the world.
Yeah.
What doesn't matter is what happens in the 90 minutes on the pitch.
No, exactly.
It doesn't matter.
Exactly, yeah.
And yet, that's where the importance is. The importance is results, it's promotion, exactly. It's relegation, money.
It's so much about the numbers. And if you view football just as the numbers and as the results, then you're going to get out of it what you put into it. It's just going to be something that effectively only a finite number of teams will actually win something. And so you're really going to be like grasping things.
Yeah. I realise we're probably going into the last 5 minutes now, but I mean, a sort of follow-up question which I had lined up, which we kind of already answered, is will fans be more or less happy in the future? And I mean, Chris, you've sort of said that that as long as there's a team there that you support,
which is likely to be there in the future, then you've always got a team to support, or you can find a team to support. But, you know, let's say you follow maybe a Premier League team or a Championship team, or a team that plays even in the Champions League, dare I say. What is it that's going to retain or increase fans' happiness or satisfaction in football? Is it going to be having, say, more standing areas in the stadium? Is it going to be having more involvement in the running of their club? You know, greater financial stability? What things are going to be required to maintain people's satisfaction in following football or following their club?
I think there's a separation. I think there are fans who would much rather have a billionaire owner than have all of those. Safe standing would be great for me. Having a bigger say or even a stake in my club would be great for me, but ultimately it would mean that the club was less competitive, and I really don't think that most fans would accept that.
I think it's a sad state, but yeah, I mean, in the current climate, everything is results driven, and especially when you've got the billionaire clubs, the loss-leading billionaire clubs, basically throwing the whole sense of competition out the window. Yeah, you can't say that there is a level playing field. There wasn't a level playing field anyway. Now it's completely out of kilter.
Fair enough.
Our fans will probably be happy for, you know, training Malta for a few years. Reality is they won't be that happy. They'll start saying, let's change things, let's spend a lot of money, let's put up season ticket prices and not get anywhere. And that's exactly what will happen. All the time you're playing against teams that are being funded by billionaires who don't care how much money they spend on wages. You're never going to keep your best players. You're always going to like miss out on players that you're after in the transfer market. There's no way you can get around that. Not unless you want to treble, quadruple the amount of season ticket.
I suppose the one extra thing that I should have probably added onto that list of potential sort of improvements to the game is kind of maybe increasing or raising the level at which regional leagues kind of kick in, just to kind of increase perhaps local competition and stuff like that. But anyway,
that's something we can talk about another time, because that's something I think is quite interesting.
Rapidly running out of time, there's so many more things I want to sort of talk about, but I'm going to go for one thing I mentioned right at the beginning and come back to you, Chris, on this one. Should we, as football fans, I know I'm going to get laughed out of the room about this, but should we as football fans have more empathy towards our fellow football fans? Obviously, the whole history of the game, certainly in this country and I dare say many others, is built on the kind of rivalries between clubs. But should we kind of have more empathy at the risk of maybe watering down the kind of passion in the game?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we should. I don't think that rivalry necessarily needs to be diluted in order for that to happen. Rivalry should be sporting rivalry.
Yeah.
And it can go as far as, you know, nominally kind of pretending to hate people. But ultimately, why shouldn't we just kind of just feel some kind of kinship as being fellow football supporters in a world where, you know, traditionally football supporters have kind of been frowned upon. And okay, it's pretty standard nowadays, but it hasn't always been, and we should have an identity just for being a fan.
I think it would be fine. I think we're not talking about the level of saying, like you know, you as a Villa fan, you know, want Birmingham in the same division as you. No. They can sit at the division below.
Yeah.
They can sit and fester there, can't they? It's just the fact that you wouldn't want Birmingham to go out of business.
No, and it comes down, not wanting a fellow supporter to lose their club.
Which is quite possible. Yeah. It's a serious
thing. And it's also just even silly things like, if you have a debate with me, a Birmingham supporter, about football versus rugby, or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Or even football versus society.
Yeah.
I would want other supporters to kind of join me on the side of football.
Yeah, there will be common ground. You have it's like whole DNA and with chimpanzee things, isn't it? Really, it's like
you should say that.
Yeah.
Back to Birmingham City. No,
Birmingham fans do peel bananas with their feet.
And they don't have feet.
Well, they're cloven hooves. But yeah, it's a fact that, like, you know, you're 98% the same, 2% different, and it's that 2% that is obviously the thing that we notice.
To be honest, right now I would take 2% the same, 98% difference. As long as that 2% kicks in at some point. But at the moment, it is so black and white.
Yeah.
I hate you, you hate me. That's the end of it. There is nothing in common, apart from the fact that we dedicate hours and hours of our lives to the same thing.
Yes. And that, I think, on that bombshell, is probably a good place to leave it. Like I said before, there's so much that we could have discussed, and maybe we will leave it for a part B later on in time, and maybe we can even get Chris back in to carry on the discussion.
Oh, but,
yes, I'm not sure. We've got to get together, Graham, you and I, and give him marks out of 10 for how well he's building material now. I'm not so sure.
Oh, no, no, building material, 20, I think.
But anyway, we must leave it there. But just a big thanks to Chris for standing in for Terry this week. A tremendous replacement for him. Perhaps too good in the sense that maybe Terry is in you know, risking his place in the regular lineup.
I think we can get a swap deal going.
Oh, what's that?
I think we can get a swap deal.
A swap deal?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Send him off to.
Send him off to the 2-foot tackle. Give him a season long loan out there.
He might be listening, Terry. Anyway, there it is. Thank you very much indeed for listening. I hope you enjoyed that debate. And as ever, if there's anything you want to chip in, given what we said earlier on, you probably won't leave any comments on our blog. But
if here come the trolls.
But if you do want to get in touch with us, you know the places to come to. It's footballfairground.com/soundoffootball. You can get us on Twitter, twitter.com/soundoffootball. And we have a Facebook page as well, /soundoffootball on the end of that too. And of course, it would be remiss of us not to mention Chris's regular vehicle, twofootytackle.com. Where can people find you, Chris? Do the plug.
They can find me at aforementioned site, or at twofootytackle on Twitter, or facebook.com/twofootytackle.
Yes, indeed. And of course, as we mentioned before, right at the beginning, he can also be found writing about MLS in a tremendous fashion at footballfairground.com/Americana for Football Americana as well. Gents, it's been wonderful. Thank you very much indeed for your company. Thank you, the listener, for joining us. We hope you'll join us again sometime very soon. But for now, from the Globe Pub in London, from the three of us, it's a fond farewell. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.